within events, as was announced, the subject, a very practical one, begins with asking a question, where's life, what purpose? Now this word purpose is sometimes misconstrued as some kind of object a man should pursue. If you ask a person, what is the object of your life? He will immediately turn to his chosen profession or the career that he is trying to build for himself. Try to visualize that he may enter one day into a particular state. There is a humorous, the first of the surrender now, a humorous situation. Somebody asked a schoolboy, what does he want to be? He said, I'll be a retired millionaire. I'll be a retired millionaire. In other words, he said, not only collected money, but now he's retired, and now he's enjoying himself. So that is the kind of perspective. Sometimes we children have been into this kind of image. What will I be? A retired millionaire. So, there is another humorous situation, since we like to speak in a humorous way. This is a typical successful American businessman was born in a countryside where he worked at hell so that he could live in the city. Where he worked at hell so that he could live in the countryside. So he would strive all his life to achieve what they call financial gain. To live in, for a villager to live in a city life would be some kind of a progress, achievement. And then they work very hard in the city life so that in their retirement they can go back to their beautiful husband and enjoy themselves. Now this is a true paradox of it. This is truly what is happening. Then people, when they talk about purpose of life, it doesn't mean what is the actual aim for which they have begun their life. What the whole vast development of life could mean, what it means. Then it means immediate purpose, immediate objective, immediate goals, the immediate aims. That is what people can think when they think of life. So nobody gives at all any mind to live. Either they will drift, as the previous speaker said, that if you drift like a wool, or if you drift like a rudderless ship, then you will be without any meaning and purpose. You merely exist. But nature now says that life means, and he says philosophy, is to see things or life steady and to see whole. A kind of perception. That is, you see steady, persistent, objective, and then see whole. And that means totality. That's not only in consideration to what are immediate objects of our life, but a long time to you of the very existence for which we are here, the very existence in which we are participating. So this long time view never occurs to us. And therefore, in Dhammapada, immediately, our Lord Buddha says straight away, in the very second, let each man first establish himself in the way he should go. Means, it arose the right view. According to among the eight steps, the right view. First establish himself the way he should go. And then, let him teach others. Of course, in that human resolve, that's the right resolve, that is also the second step. But then you must know the right view of the self. And this is what we are going to consider in a brief time for us. Now, there is another statement that an unexamined life is deeply vain. If you have never examined your life, Socrates says, then you can never ask yourself why it is this, why are things. Then it is almost, you being drifted away, you are carried away by circumstances, by conditions, by destiny. And then what the answer to this? There are various schools that have answered that question, you see. There is a school that is called the motivation psychologists that answer. Social scientists have also answered that question. Religions have also tried to answer that question. Philosophers have also tried to answer the questions that what is the purpose of life itself? And then the whole philosophy of life, what very accurately called the science of life. This is actually a definition of philosophy. Philosophy is the actual vast science of life itself. This covers almost everything, every single atom to the highest angel that you can imagine. And therefore we refer to that motivation psychology later, but we go to the motivation psychology. What it thinks about the man and his activity. The motivation psychologists think that the man, the motive which drives a man onwards are his basic needs. So it is need-based. And his need is not only his roti, kapda, and mukha, but essentially personal security. This is what drives him. So much of his activity, the bulk of his activity, you might say, is pursued in order to achieve this security and with food, shelter, and clothing. This basic needs that must be fulfilled. Without which, not only the man is almost feels empty, but he is very much insecure. You can't teach a higher philosophy to a man with an empty stomach, or a man who doesn't have a roof over his head. He must have at least, this is the very basic, this is the very right human life, if you ask. That man must have at least this. So this is okay, as you ask, as far as it goes. So motivation psychologist talks about what motivates man to his lives. But there is one psychologist, you are also a psychoanalyst, Dr. Eric Fromm. And he thinks that he goes much further, that in addition to these basic needs, there are deeper needs, which he discovered as very few what are called self-actualized people. And they have felt that an integral progress is the only thing that can satisfy them. And integral means total, all around. That there was not only good physical welfare, no problem of eating or drinking, no problem about securities. In addition to that, there is some deeper need, the call, to become an important part of this human society. They would like to fill themselves into this human society in such a way that not only they grow, but in the bargain, the whole society also is lifted up. So that perspective, you know, it comes to them spontaneously. It's not something which is done at the universities. Because he was doing researches with the university students. And he found that 10% of them have got this unmotivated attitude towards life, that they want to achieve something, not only for themselves. And not only achieve merely intellectually and physically, but also in some inward direct dimensions, which he inwardly felt. Maybe they were not at all religious kind of people, they were not at all defining some holy, holy things. You know, they were not that kind of person. They were virtuous, no wonder. They were very sensible individuals. They were looking at life steadily, as they say. And then, the total perspective. And from the very beginning, he's intuitively a good judge. Talking about intuition, you see, like saying manager. Right from childhood, he was able to see immediately the whole perspective of life was a very vast thing. He didn't think that he was one of the four children and that he was part of the family. Only he was not limited. Right from childhood, he thought of the whole world. So this perspective then comes to some people intuitively. And they feel that life is empty without embracing all other, including other beings and creatures. In fact, that happened to Lord Buddha, that he was fully satisfied with life physically, even intellectually. But something in him felt empty, and he wanted to find out why. So he went out into the world to find out the meaning of self, and how it can be. So this perspective, everything can be done. Guru is putting up the spiritual kind of life. He only needs a sensible life. A life which is of a maturity. A mature man thinks beyond this world. He goes everything beyond. What is immediate objects. Because he always stops it. See, such a life view, as what Buddha says, you must know where he is going to go in the first instance. He must be very direct. He knows his direction and also his goal. Clear-minded about this. So the man should move to objective, even immediate object. He is only then he can pursue it. That's what anybody can tell you in all this money, business management school will tell you. That you must have a very clear-minded vision. You may dream about very great things, but that dreams must be very clear. In fact, they say you must put it down in paper and pencil, your dreams, and then visualize it. Then only you can achieve it. So this clear-minded perception of life and the right perspective, the matter for that man. So maybe need-based psychology will not be fully satisfactory unless there is an integral progress. Now social psychology is one of them is this Alexis Keller. He wrote a book called Man the Unknown. And in that, he is trying to show, he was a biologist. He done a tremendous research work, and he was also a social scientist by himself, all in the church, a philosopher in his own right. So he discovered that much of this discipline, scientific disciplines, biology, physiology, anatomy, etc., etc., they are so compartmentalized that there is no interdisciplinary interconnectedness. So this year, most of the time, institutions like universities, they pursue particular and individual subjects for an individual student, specializing them in a particular field, perhaps at the expense of other schools of thought. So physicists may not know anything about psychology, or psychologists may not know much about mathematics. In that sense, that what doesn't mean that you should be a all-rounder, you should be a mathematician, a musician, a financial, and so on and so on. It doesn't mean that. But the perspective, the outlook should be, and therefore he calls it the man the unknown, that the real part of man is not known to the scientists. And he discovered also, Harry Fromm, that there is in man something very much higher, which demands, which asks for an inner satisfaction. The outward life was not satisfied, they enjoy themselves thoroughly in that outward way. But having done that, they find that there is still something to be achieved, something to hold by. And immediately the love is the initiative. They found that the interpersonal relationship, the loving interpersonal relationship, is one of the most healthy ways by which you are coming to fulfillment. That is one closest that you can go to of the meaning that can fulfill life's purpose. That reminds me of one industrialist article who says that somebody was trying to find a sensor, trying to find how people are happy, finding how many people are happy in this world. So at New York's very busy mall, some reporters were waiting and asking every man and woman, are you happy? Yes or no? And there were 3 degrees of things. Very happy? Yes, I'm happy. No, I'm not sure. And today he was surprised and he asked why, the why of the happiness. He found that 70% of the women were saying they were happy. And majority of them are married, and majority of them are a child, at least one child. So the fulfillment of women could be a satisfactory married life, and to conceive, and to have a baby of their own. Now this is amazing, psychological life fulfillment for individual women, womanhood. Most of the men, of course, were talking about their achievements and goals and other things, but they were not so very happy. 70% of the human beings of which women were there said they were happy. Now this is only a very limited view of happiness, but personal relationship that brings some measure of happiness, misery. But now we are talking about the grand school. Have life not use the Buddha. Like this, there is no existence for this we are here. This is a very vast thing. So we have to turn to philosophy. And somebody defines philosophy or science of life. In India we call it Atmavidya. He says that it looks at the inner or the real causes. Then it investigates into the very causal side of things. Effects, yes. Why not? Effects, that you can show. But, and the how of it, you can show. But the deeper causes, not the superficial causes. Supposing I have with an axiom. So axiom is the cause for which I am hospitalized. And that is reason. But going behind the cause of the axiom, that requires a greater insight. So the going into the causal side of things requires a little philosophical bent of mind. Another question a good philosopher would ask is, what is good? What is intrinsically good for? Immediate good for man, as we say, is just good on man, must be fully satisfied as far as his biological, physiological, psychological, spiritual, physical needs. But in addition to these immediate needs, which are really urgent and necessary to be, there is something which will remain empty. If you give the man everything that he wants physically, still he will ask for more. This is human nature, we always ask for more. Because there is something in his constantly searching for happiness, which is elusive. Fulfillment which continually eludes him because he has not found the center of his being, the real purpose for which he is here, about which we are going to speak. And therefore, what is good for man requires an answer, but on a scale of values. What is the value of the human life? As we said, the human considered married life and having a baby is their value. And a man in a business profession is thing. They are receiving goods. This whole achievement is the thing which nowadays drives people. Actually, literally drives them slave to their achievements. At any cost, at the cost of their family, at the cost of their character. They want to sell their soul. That's why they have given for a very good statement somewhere. Ramachwana, how does it profit a man if he wants to gain the whole world but suffer the loss of his own soul? And here the word soul is working, is also considered as splendor or glory. To lose your own glory as a human being, just for profits oriented human exertion. So the modern view and the modern system answers the scale of views, of course, is a value system is based purely on what is good for me, for my immediate needs. And what is right? And what is right is something which is comes in the bracket of ethical choice. What is right for me? Not only what is good for me, but what is right for me? Because it is the right for me, the proper thing for me, will fulfill further and punish. He may be a very poor man, but he has the glory of the Lord. That he looks upon himself with certain offer as self-esteem. Once I asked her, once I came across a lady working in the bank, and she was telling me about the scam, these monetary scams. And she says she was in a high position that even she was tempted once upon a time to enter into some kind of deal which was not proper. And then she says, but I would gain a lot, but I would fall in my own eyes. In my own estimation, I would fall. So this self-esteem is something which is, it's not that for worldly kind of self-esteem. Esteem is based on this glory. Suffer the loss of his own soul to avoid this. So this profit orientation is the thing of the day. The whole world, as we actually told about this American, you know, that he works like hell in order to come to a city life and works in city like hell so that he can finally achieve relaxation. So this our concern continually is materialistic. And of course the result is struggle for livelihood. And worst is each for himself. This is the present philosophy of life. Each for himself. You do your things for yourself. You don't worry about what happens to your neighbor, what happens to your colleagues in your You just look at your own resources for your own benefits and your own gain, profit. And then, of course, you may gain profit in your life, of course. But at the end of it, it's quite empty. Life is not fulfilled, the unfulfilled life. So the ancient philosophy prepares us for the purpose, the real purpose of life. And for that, we have to go straight to what man really is, what does man mean. And here we enter into a vaster view of man and nature. In fact, one of the definitions of philosophy of the ancient wisdom is that it is concerned with the laws which govern the evolution of man and nature, that is, the universe itself. Laws which govern the evolution, the progress of man. So this understanding the law means what man himself is, the law, the dharma, his own real dharma, the law here in dharma. What is that dharma which he should pursue as man? And therefore he must understand what man would mean to be human being. And what is that achievement of him? What is it can be a human being? So then the philosophy goes further and it says that humanity on the whole, totality, is like an emanation from divinity. One has to go to this first principle of life, that we have come from one divine source. If you do not accept this, the rest of the lecture is meaningless. Because we have to accept at least this, that there is something in us which is unlike. And that unlike part of us, which we instinctively feel, in fact it is intuitively felt, at the end of it, it's not going to end. Like the candle, you blow it out. It's not like that. You don't even feel like this. The survival after the existence is an instinctive feeling in every one. But behind that, there is an intuitive feeling that man is not this man of physical nature. There is something in him which is really lasting. And he sees that between sleeping and goes to sleep, the whole world is dead to him. But he wakes up once again at the same time. So there is a continuity that he feels. And he applies this analogy of going to sleep to that itself. But he thinks that must be, that must be also like this, going to sleep and then going into the continuity of life. In fact, that is the real life. This physical life, once it ends, it doesn't end there. We don't call it an end. You know, this is something intuitively felt by many people. And a person like Ramakrishna Paramahansa, a great sage, he actually at the age of 10 wanted to know what is the threshold beyond the death. Beyond the threshold of death, he wanted to discover that. At the age of 10, he went a cruise, find out for himself, actually experienced that. And with the grace of God, he did all, with the knowledge that there is a vast continuity beyond the threshold of death. And the whole life is transformed. That is transformed his whole life. This is the beginning of his existence. So this is how it is. Then most of us sometimes intuitively feel that life is not merely means living. It doesn't mean you are living. It doesn't mean merely a personal existence. It means something very, very great. It means Jivatma, the very word which is called Jivatma. So the one that governs man is governed by this inner Jivatma that is within him. And the origin is that there is a common origin. See, humanity as a whole is a vast origin, a divine origin in the very ocean of life. And then each one of us is a spark of divinity, let's say an individual unit of life. So that we are floating units of fragments of life, apparently separated, and yet so interlinked and interconnected within this ocean of life, that no one can do anything in one corner of this ocean without affecting the rest of us. So interlinked and interrelated that we are. Now, it can mean the whole vast image of existence. That existence means existence. Having continuity outside of that. And that it is not yet outside of this within the total. So, though the units are inter, though they are related to the whole, they are also interrelated. So, because there is interrelationship, if you take that right view, then the conclusion that you can draw from, how shall we conduct our life? If I am interlinked, interrelated, and interdependent on others, what must be the purpose for which I am here? So that I am so closely related that I may so live this life, that I may live it like beyond. It's something that concrete, something that substantial for the totality. This is a kind of conclusion you arrive at if you intuitively feel that life is as vast as this. So it's one given principle of life, is various units of life, and then we are each a unit of life, a youth, a spark of unity, and it's called Jivatma, and therefore it has a purpose. And that, that once the journey starts, therefore they say vanity and emanation from divinity. But on its bitter part of it, that we are emanated, yes, no wonder, radiated out. But ultimately going round and coming back to the same source. The whole evolutionary cycle is like this. And therefore it must be a very vast matter. It cannot be limited to this physical unit. It covers practically everything. Yes, faster than. Even astronomers have arrived at this conclusion. If we can see the whole firmament, vastness of it all, vastness of space and time, that they cannot help being mystical in coming to the conclusion that a puny little life on earth cannot be meaningless. It cannot be meaningless. If everything is functioning in such perfect order, there is a perfect design behind this cosmic order. There must be design and a purpose behind my personal life, a little life that it is, a little joke, a little happy, little life that I am. So we have to consider that, therefore, as a little gem, a little spark of light, whichever we may call it. And therefore, Mr. Kosky gives a very good definition of man. We are working into our reading of man. Man's higher nature, with that in our third reading, man's higher nature is not divisible, but it is constant, eternal, and true. Higher nature. That means there is something in us which is higher, permanent, non-dying. The lower nature, of course, is impermanent, which we already know is changing, which we call our personality, Mr. XYZ. But the individual, invisible man within, that which is invisible, which is not yet known, which we have felt, is the one who makes these changes and who makes these conditions. So he is the author of the real inner man, he is the author of our outer life. He is the director and a producer of the world. So that's why he says, he gathers experience and knowledge through these experiences. Who chooses his appropriate role for the purpose of necessary experience. Now the word role actually immediately brings to our mind using the idea of life being a drama. Shakespeare would say that, no? The life is a great drama. Each one is playing a role. But the real telling us that is a silent one. That is almost forgotten. When an actor absorbs himself in his role, he really forgets this real, who is the real actor himself. He really doesn't know. A real great actor is the one who totally identified himself with the role that is given to him. Whether it's a female role or a male role, or a King Lear or a Hamlet, whatever the part is playing in a drama, a great actor is the one who forgets himself. Unfortunately, that's what is exactly what has happened to the real actor in us. But the real man in us is the real actor, the silent being who plays the role outer world. And this inner being is also the director of the whole life. It is yes, the whole situation of that. What in a family background, situation, story, and beginning at the end. So this says, no, who chooses his own appropriate role for the purpose of necessary experience, and he has had progress. Experience doesn't end yet. The whole experience is taken by. We take experience because we learn from that experience. So that immediately brings us to another possibility. We go to the other quotation of Mr. Crosby. Second quotation. That is not that which sustains the outer man, which gathers experience, retains it, and carries it forward, is and propels his evolution, is the one changeless, eternal, immortal self. Again we go to that. It is that, that immortal part of us, which sustains that outer man, vitalizes it, which gathers experiences, learns from them, retains them, doesn't get lost, because then he himself becomes a storehouse of that knowledge, storehouse of that lessons learned from that experiences. He becomes the soul. That part of us, we have learned from something. We have burned my finger, now learned my experience, the nature of fire. I have been cheated, and I have learned what is it to be stabbed in the back, what is it to be cheated by somebody. And it hurts me. And now I have hurt, I have learned, it is so bad, so evil to cheat another. So having experienced it, it becomes a lesson for us. And then it can become internal, assimilated, become part of our character, which is retained permanently into our consciousness. So this role playing is not merely a dharma, it is also a learning experience. And dharma becomes a knowledge, right? Experience and knowledge to them. And then of course he chooses an appropriate role in order that he can get experience. Now as far as the role is given, as we said, by the inner director, the real inner permanent entity, the higher ego, the immortal man, is chosen appropriately. The real conditions in which we are born is appropriately chosen by the inborn entity, the real individual in man, the real man. For after all, the real life of man is the life of the soul. The outward life within this 30, 40, 80 years of our life is indeed a life, but this is totally forgotten at the end of 100 years from now. But then life and after 100 years, nobody remembers it, not only great grandchildren. Is totally effaced out of this memory on this earth. And yet, that is something which continues to survive. This is the immortal. And what does it take with him? That he takes with him his experiences, the sense of the experiences that he has gathered. And then becomes, as we say, becomes a part of his character. It also becomes part of his soul. It becomes a part of his voice called the voice of conscience. Having learned an experience, you can know the voice of the conscience is nothing else but a hinting from behind. What is right for you, what is not so right for you. And then sometimes an intuitive insight into knowledge. That comes from the past experiences that we have gathered. If only we could recover that whole memory that we have gathered through various lives, we would be like saints, we would be like great sages. If you were to recover the total memory of the total experience. But which is that internal, which is that within it, waiting to unfold. So the whole purpose of life is to unfold. That unfold, what evolution or evolution? Evolution means unfold. That means it's folded in. It's like a bud, waiting to come to full bloom flower. So the full manhood, full humanity, full humanhood. To achieve that requires undergoing these experiences after experience after experience. And most of the time you don't learn from experience. That is a pity of it. If you don't learn from experiences, then you have to repeat those experiences. Just as you fail in exams, you have to repeat that class until you have mastered that situation. So, and if you learn something, of course, every time you fail, every time you keep trying and इतनी चाहे अंतिम योग डेली लाइफ में सर्कल सो नो मन कैन लर्न विदाउट फेलियर सो वी आर नथिंग टू वरी अबाउट वी अ फेलियर बट वी हैव टू वरी अबाउट वी हैव टू कंटिन्यू एंड दैट लाइफ दैट ऑफर्स एन अपॉर्चुनिटी That what you can consider life as a great opportunity is not merely a burden. It is a kind of learning experience. Provided we are awake to those experiences. You see, if you live life, you see, without mindlessly, there is a chapter in Dhammapada called vigilance, or mindfulness. If you live your life, you see, without being bothered about what's going on, mindful of not only the condition and the circumstances, But mindful of what, how I mean. There is something which stands behind us as a witness, who is observing us, who is looking at us. And he watches our behavior. If you can put ourselves into the position of that inner monitor who admonishes us, that inner monitor who watches on us, who permits us certain liberty, experiment with life work. In order that you can learn from that experience. It is possible. It is possible sometimes to go to a man and provoke him and see how that man becomes angry. And then see himself how he will not become angry. In spite of being insulted, in spite of being treated badly, in spite of being beaten up. Now this is the kind of experiment a man can afford to do if he wants to learn from experience. With that experience as it could be. But one need not see, you need to put our finger into fire in order that you may learn what fire is like. It need not be. Life offers ample opportunities to learn from life. But you need learn. So the purpose of life is to learn. And it is all made up of learning, says Mr. Kutcher. The whole purpose of life is to learn, it is all made up of learning, and through these various roles. The opportunities that is given by the roles that we have to play, Today it may be a woman's body, tomorrow it may be a male body, today it may be a young child's life, and then suddenly die, or it may be the life of a very, very old man, suffering with so many people. So why this happened? Why these experiences? So that we can become wise in spiritual things, in higher things of life. So that we may not limit ourselves to this post violent painting, so that we will limit the life. So then, therefore, if we study life at a time, or if we study life as a school, in another place it says that life is a pilgrimage. I mean, that is considered as a sacred mission. See, there is a quotation here also, it says, Mr. Jess says that, in the East, the life of man is held to be a pilgrimage. Not only from the cradle to the grave, that is only one life, but also through the vast period that stretches from the beginning to the end of Manvantara. And Manvantara means the whole period of evolution of the universe. And hence he is held to be a spiritual being. Now this is what you have to accept. This to be held as a spiritual being, that's not the image. The continuity of his existence is unbroken. So being a spiritual entity, it is an undying entity, it is an immortal entity, and therefore it is unbroken. So from house to house, he passes, disguised by body, as he disguises old clothing, as they say in Bhagavad Gita, that the man who disguises body as he disguises clothing, and puts on a new. And what is that to regret? Krishna tells Arjuna, what is there dying? What is there to be afraid of dying? He is putting on a new clothing. It may be a celestial clothing. So, the pilgrimage concept means a very sacred mission. That is taking life not merely seriously, not with a long face, not with a, as we just told you, not without a sense of humor. This means a happy man who can give happiness to others. A man who is frustrated with himself, frustrated with his own life, frustrated with his own character, cannot be a good companion. He will be always complaining and it's almost a burden on us. So really an inwardly well contented man, I wouldn't say a very happy man, a very contented man, But we see life for what it is worth. And challenges of life, the challenges of life come up. He takes it in his own strength. And takes it as an experience. Takes it as a challenge. Even if he is put into a very awkward situation, it comes to him as a challenge. And therefore he takes it up so that he can learn from it. You may make mistakes. A person is not afraid of making a mistake because he wants to learn from it. But then, should be conducted without forgetting our center. Because if you are going away from your center, you may get lost into the circumference. You see, if you get lost into the vacuum of life and forget that you are the hero here, that you are placing this vacuum as a hero, as a kshatriya, as a true warrior. That's what Krishna tells Arjuna, that you are the warrior, we have got a great destiny. And there is an opportunity given to you. So we are like this, in the great battlefield of life, that we must not allow ourselves to get lost in it. If we are constantly aware of some higher purposes for which we are here, because we are higher beings in our inmost nature, in our permanent nature. Although we are very, very victims, we are poor creatures, we are poor sample, we have nothing to be proud of. We need not be, in fact. But we have to be proud. The real dignity of man comes from being a spiritual, comes to being a, they say, he is a thinker in his own right, compared to animal kingdom. So it's a ground piece of evolution. The evolution from the lower kingdom comes up to the man. Man is the ground piece, the highest that evolution process can achieve. But does it stop there? This man has become a human being, that's enough. That he has to become a superhero. And that we have on this earth, great ones who descend on this earth for ourselves. They are left behind on the footprints on the sand of time and shown the way that we are following. Those great ones are the ones who have achieved the canister of enlightenment, achieved the highest goal that human being is required to achieve. Having achieved it, they come back to us for ourselves in order to teach humanity that life is not a small thing as this, but it has a vast of possibilities provided you take your life in your own way. First of all, you need a resolve. You must have a right perspective, right view. As Lord Buddha said, right view. So theosophy is there in this world in order to teach us the right view. Because if you have a right perception, the right motive for living, then there is no regrets. At the end of life, you may start doing that. And you can very, very say and go to sleep very happily, conveniently, without any regret or without any demand from the life at all. Thank you. We can now, we can ask questions, we have about 5 minutes to answer. This question is that whether should we take moksha as the true purpose for which we are here? It is the ultimate purpose of Nirvana. Because what Krishna does not start with that. When he gives a discourse to Arjuna, he doesn't believe that way. He believes it himself. He is in the battle, in the center. And he tells him about his beauty. What are you for right here, right now? Nature has placed you into this category. You have been born a kshatriya. You have been kept into this awkward situation where you have to fight against your own friends and your own family members. When you are placed in that situation, what to do about that? First of all, look at it while you are here. You are here as a kshatriya. Look at your beauty. So, at least the student thinks that if you are very clear as far as our major purpose of life is, that as human beings, we must live with our face looking straight, with a backbone erect, without stooping like an animal. That's why it's called Homo erectus. Man is called Homo erectus. His only teacher was Kant's intellect. And that his deity consisted in various spiritual entity. And then, of course, the far ultimate goal is, of course, release from this burden of reincarnation. But until the lesson is learned, we have to go on repeating the lessons of life. So, in such time, the major purpose is to learn the lesson of life and do the best within these four opportunities that is given to us in this particular life. Because that is it, because ultimately it appears to be a continuous struggle of existence. And you may call it a gradual life. But it can also, as you said, be a pilgrimage. And being a part of pilgrimage, it's a very heavy image, because if you go on a pilgrimage, you don't go alone. You take other co-pilgrims along with you, and you cheer them, and you sing to them, and give them first aid, and help them to go up and climb up. Go climb the higher and higher heights, along with our co-pilgrims, holding their hands, collectively, not for yourself. You are not going on a pilgrimage for yourself. You are going in a company of pilgrims. And as we do that, we are concerned with other pilgrims. So this, if you are absorbing this, then don't worry about the liberation that can come, as it happened at once. There's a story about a fellow asked her, something I forgot about one god, that how many lives are required to achieve a moksha? The fellow said, seven lives. Seven more lives? Wow, so much, seven more lives. We were so anxious about reaching perfection. Then he came across another man who was a musician, dancer, an artist, and he also asked, how many lives are you required to achieve my ultimate goal, moksha? He says, 1,000 lives. 1,000 lives? Good. 6,000 lives? Good. I'll make the best of it. So he was not bothered about his moksha. He was bothered about what can I do my best here and now. So if we are really concerned about us doing that here and now, we have our own moksha every night when we go to sleep. When we go to sleep in a deep sleep condition, we are really liberated from this burden of existence. We are now very closest to the center of our being, in communion with our being actually. Momentarily, split second maybe, how long one can say. But in that silence of the moment, you have already touched almost an experience of nirvana, dual liberation from personal existence. This is a foretaste of things to come. If you can recall that memory of this experience of our dream life, of Sushupta, the life of dreamless state, if you can really recall, you will really have experienced the joy of liberation, without nirvana. So no wonder, the ultimate goal is nirvana, with every story of Tavutelli. And we are not dragged on it very much because we are more concerned about our day-to-day as human beings. And human beings as man, manusha, a thinker. And therefore, since the thinking faculty is given to us, we must be a good chooser. And the right view must really be the right view of life. And if you consider ourselves an animal, as the scientists or psychologists would say, oh, we are a glorious animal, we are a social animal, and so we are the peak of animal kingdom. All those ideas of being an animal. Then the law of the jungle applies to man. Struggle for livelihood, struggle for existence and all this. If you consider man as a spark of living, if you can remember that, and never forget about this, that it is real nature. Is there any other question?
Life of the pilgrim is described as an optimum of self-conscious existence. Oh. What exactly you mean by that?
I think it is very clear that to achieve this moksha, one has to give up personal life and students. The time comes in the stage of an individual student. Then he is no longer permits himself to get involved into this personal life. He lives, he is in the company of human beings, he is in the city, he is absorbing his day-to-day affairs of life. But there is something in him which recruits. And that his inwardly is the life of a material in the sense that he is undergoing severe trials of life. such a disciple, such a state of illusion, who has pursued wisdom throughout his life, and in this pursuit he has undergone this kind of magic. Sacrifice his personality. I don't mean personality, kill his body, kill his connections, sever himself with everything, go into the jungle. It doesn't mean that. A martyrdom is day to day giving up that which you love most. Sometimes you have to give up your own personal life. That kind of martyrdom. And then only, only then, the next stage is a possibility of a much higher life. So Chela, the disciple who has chosen the path, has to undergo this kind of experience of Machidam, experience of excruciating suffering, so that he may achieve the ultimate good. This is really at the very highest stage of consciousness. We end here by this previous writing. Man dies without having lived for a moment in the presence of his own soul. Most of us die without having lived even for a moment in the presence of his own soul. Never aware that he is the soul. Swept away as he is by the whirlwind of egoistic and mundane affairs. So this continuing existence of our world and so completely takes out our consciousness that never once we stop to think that there is a permanent entity which is going beyond the threshold of death. That is the real person. This is my real being.